It's those two assholes, those two idiots you saw me talking to at the third rail.
Just, he doesn't want to touch the third rail.
That's, you've hit the third rail for sure.
That is the third rail, saying white people have interest.
Third rail. The third rail here is another wonderful show on our TRS network.
And it's the third rail. You will be destroyed.
It's the third rail. You will be destroyed.
Watch out for the third rail, baby. That's high voltage.
In the opinion of this reporter, if this nation, or in fact the world, ever needed heroes, that time is now. That time is now.
Like wizards use art to summon Satan, this is happening. It is episode 194 of the most huggable, evergreen, shipping-loving podcast on air since 1973, The Third Rail. We are coming to you almost live in the mobile Third Rail studio, this time from the Suez Canal, where wizards have stopped one-third of the world's globalist trade, and we couldn't be happier. Hi, how are you? It is Spectre, and joining me on the mics, we have Dharma King. How you doing,
Namaste,
sir?
Namaste, my niggas.
Is that a drop, or was that from...
That was a little live, but yeah.
You saw that somebody clipped that out for you.
I did. I was very touched.
Yep. And my man, Larry Ridgway, how are you doing, sir?
Doing great, man. Doing great. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for producing, and thanks for that audio flub this morning, because I miss Borzoi, and now I don't miss him as much.
It was on purpose.
but first, a quick word from our sponsor. This ad was, by the way, submitted from the Bellerophon Ad Agency in Manhattan. From the creative minds at Marvel Studios, get ready for the diverse and inclusive summer blockbuster that's fun for the whole family. Tequavius was just a normal African-American youth in Chicago, attending three colleges and four churches simultaneously. He was never in trouble. He was often described by his friends as a good boy who has done not anything. Until one day, a radioactive bug escapes from the soy factory. It bites Tequavius while he's in the middle of a physics dissertation and watching Dragon Ball Z. That's when Tequavius is imbued with the power of bugs, and he becomes the caped hero, Bug Black. This summer, criminals will be fearfully asking, have you seen this Bug Black?
Attending three churches and four colleges at the same time.
Exactly.
That's great.
Bellerophon just gets better and better at those. Oh my god, this is we're gonna do a kind of a lazy Saturday morning show. We're gonna have a small audience just because we kind of did this at the last minute. But how are you guys doing? What have y'all been up to before we even get to the table of contents?
I don't know about you guys, but I've just been out here kicking ass and taking names. I got some really, really good news yesterday. I got 5 days off in a row, so
nice.
Cannot complain. Riding a lot of bike lately.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I got
you
a shitty...
taking the McNabb pill?
No. He like races and like rides like hundreds of miles. I have like a shitty mongoose like road bike that I'll ride like maybe 4 miles like to the store.
I think people need to, there's a distinction between like I own a bicycle and I ride it for, you know, exercise and pleasure. I would not consider myself, quote, a cyclist, because, you know, I don't wear the pants or the helmet or do any of that shit. I just like to get outside on my bike in the nice weather. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I have like a hybrid that I'll use for, you know, like you said, exercise, to get outside. I don't own any Lycra except for my collection of cosplay superhero costumes.
You ought to be ashamed of yourself.
I'm kidding. Well, it's funny you mentioned bikes, because I'm dealing with some stuff right now coming off of a bike injury from last summer, actually. I was riding along a highway and I got clipped by a car, and it took like 3 months for it to show up, but I had like a soft tissue injury that morphed into sciatica nerve being pinched.
My sciatica, oh God.
Oh God, yeah, well, I thought that was like an old person's thing, but I learned like 20-year-olds get it. It just has to do with like traumatic injury to an area. But the long and the short of it was, my doctor was like, okay, you just got to completely rest. You got to, you know, all activity for about 2 or 3 weeks. You just give it time to heal. And of course, being a guy, I'm like, you know, head to the side, no, I will work through this. Pain will help me. And so I tried, you know, running and walking and biking, and all, it just all made it worse. So finally I gave in, gosh, I guess about December-ish, when you shouldn't be giving in on any kind of activity. And between that and the Thanksgiving eating, yeah, lost some muscle and gained some weight, about net gain of like 10 pounds. Not pretty, especially on somebody my height. So
what's that supposed to mean?
Like,
I thought you were 6'1". No, I'm just joking.
Exactly. 6'7".
No, we saw your like Like, you know, before we got on here.
No way, dude. I'm not that tall. But no, so I, you know, with the warmer weather coming and having gotten over that, I guess about a month and a half ago, I started back into lifting and running and all that, but I just wasn't shedding. And so I started eating better, still wasn't. So now I'm doing the thing where it's like intermittent fasting. And when I'm not intermittent fasting, like if it gets to be too much, I'll actually do like two raw eggs, you know, just tide me over until my actual dinner.
Two raw eggs?
Yeah.
You just crack them open and you drink them?
Yes, sir. Rocky style.
I thought, nah. No, you. No.
Yeah. Well, I started by like.
That's got to be disgusting.
Putting a little bit of V8 in with them. Just, you know, just let them slide down kind of like oysters.
And I'm like, I kind of like me. I'm like, my stomach is kind of churning right now thinking about that. Oh, I don't. I like. I fucking hate eggs, though, to begin with. So I eat.
Well,
them,
I'm not going to say it's easy, but it's actually made a difference. Like, I mean, pounds have been coming off. The energy levels have been like through the roof, and I've actually been sleeping like through the night instead of like, you know, 3 hours, wake up, pace around for an hour, 3 hours, you know, that kind of thing. So
now you think the intermittent fasting is, you know, helping you out in those, like,
I think so. I honestly think so. I don't know. This is not the, you know, the Fit Lords podcast or anything like that, but I kind of just wanted to get it off my chest that, you know, even when you're over 40, when things start slowing down, if you, you know, adjust your diet and your workout, you know, it can make a huge difference.
Yeah, well, I mean, and that's why I've been like trying to ride bike more often, honestly, like with workout stuff. Like, I don't do it to like cycle, but it's, I just remember I used to ride bike all the time when I was younger, and I was like 160, 170 pounds at like 6'2". And I was,
yeah.
Yeah, I was very, very lean. Now I'm like 200. But if I just ride my bike more often, I can get down to where I want to be around like 185. So yeah, just by trying to do the stuff that I did a lot when I was younger. I tried to skateboard there for a while, but when you're like riding down the road, going to the store to get like a sugar-free Red Bull or something, and you know, you're cruising along and you hit a rock and you just, your board stops, you fly forward, smash onto the fucking pavement. That's about enough of that. And then you just decide that at 31 years old.
Yeah, 30, you're not going to recover as quickly as you did when you were a teenager.
I laid there. Like, where am I skating?
Staring up at the sky, just contemplating your mortality.
This is what you get for trying to do something that you did when you were a teenager when you're in your fucking 30s, Larry.
Oh, my God. So, yeah, that's all. I just wanted to catch up on personal stuff. We just haven't really sat around and talked in a while. Dharma King, what about you, man? What have you been doing?
I'm doing well. Yeah, I got some. I don't want to share too much. I've the thing I mentioned in the group chat, basically, I have recently some very good news, and so things are going well. And I got more good news coming soon. So yeah, things are, you know, it's funny. I've often noticed it's a pattern in my life where, like, I don't know what weird karmic thing it is, but like, typically the better things go for me personally, the worse everything is collapsing kind of around me. I don't really get how that works. I guess it doesn't really matter. But yeah, I mean, you know, we're like neck deep in Wimerica and shit's getting kind of, you know, I think the pace of collapse is manifestly accelerating. But you know, at least for now, speaking for myself, just me, like things are doing really great.
Yeah, I'm noticing the same thing. Things have actually gotten better the worse things get. And I mean, I guess that's why they call him Karma King. But no, yeah, I both personal as well as financial, as all these different opportunities are opening up. And it's, I don't know if it's because of or just in spite of what's going on in the world around us. And I'm loving seeing the collapse going on around us. So,
well, it's just a validation, I think, of, I mean, I you know, we talk about confirmation bias, but yeah, it's like, at a certain point, we're, you know, like, I guess taking a step back, looking at the big picture, there was a lot of discussion and a lot of hope in, you know, 2015, 2016, that maybe there weren't political solutions per se, but that we would be able to exert our political will and turn things around that way. And as that hope was shattered, in the ruins of the, you know, the Trump administration and the inability to get anything done through whatever combination of stupidity and malice, I think after Charlottesville, people made a deliberate decision that, okay, the system isn't worth our time or our effort to even try to think about turning around. Like, instead, we're going to let history vindicate us in terms of, you know, all of this is obviously going to shit. And so we're going to work on ourselves and our communities. And that's, I think, exactly what's happened. And yeah, you know, as our, you know, people make local connections and pool parties and Manor Bund and things like that. You know, it's like you forge these friendships, you forge these relationships, you get your, you know, you become anti-fragile in your personal and economic situation as best you can, and just turn your attention towards, you know, building for a sustainable future outside of the pig system. And as that pig system just gets more and more, you know, unable to execute its most basic security functions and any other kind of functions, it doesn't affect us as much, and we do better and better. And that seems to be the pattern.
I think so. And then also, it's just a matter of stepping away from the screen and, you know, stepping outside, your eyes kind of blink, and, you know, you realize that, you know, this is more HD than your HD screen, the beauty around you. I mean, it sounds really kind of silly, but like I spent yesterday, I woke up early, did some writing, did some work, ran to the gym, lifted, ran back, got up my bow. I took up archery last summer and spent like an hour a day on it.
Based in Dradpilled, yes.
Hell yeah.
Standard recurve wooden bow. Got two different pull strengths, two different bows with two different pull strengths. And I spent like an hour a day on it. And like the target I'm shooting is getting farther and further away and smaller. And it's fun. And then I spent another couple hours just sitting outside in the sun reading. It was a beautiful spring day, and I was like, you know, everything's perfect. So,
fucking hey, man, you could change the name of this podcast to Robin Hood and His Merry Men, dude. This guy over here, fucking archery, right?
Pretty yeah. Cool. So you don't actually get to some content, or we just
no, shit? Let's continue shit posting. No, that's fine.
Well, I thought that Dharma King actually something that he said there. Kind of, I thought was a pretty good segue into like potentially like winners and losers. How he said about we're trying to like right this ship and steer this ship around. I mean, didn't you have something about a ship? I thought you mentioned something about.
Oh yeah, right. So my winner, very nice, very nice. So my winner for the week is collapsitarians. Because of this situation in the Suez Canal, we can maybe talk about a little bit. And then let's just keep the train rolling. My loser is Christy Nome, and my topic is this monologue by Tucker, and related to something that I don't think I listen. I think pretty much to all the content that the TRS network puts out, and I don't think there has been any discussion of this very interesting statement by. Maisie Hirono and Tammy Duckworth, that whites need not apply to the Biden administration to serve in any kind of cabinet, any position requiring Senate confirmation. So, that's Tucker does some kind of, you know, very like Finkel Fink 2.0 or very like, you know, anyway, we'll get to it, I guess, or I hope. But yeah, that's my topic.
Okay. Larry, what about you, sir?
Black surfers, dog. Talking about some black surfers, racial slur action at Manhattan Beach, and there's not real groids being groids. And I guess the loser, I didn't really have any of these. Loser, I guess, could be you, Spectre, because you're out there shedding the pounds, right, motherfucker?
Trying to get summer shredded, baby.
And then the winner could just us, I guess. We're winners. We're the winners.
Who's a winner, Mikey? You're a winner, Mikey.
That's right. And this isn't just participation trophies either. Winners are people who don't spend all day in front of their computer, actually get outside and enjoy the nice weather that's happening right now.
It really is. I mean, there's something about spring and the whole vitamin D and all that, and just getting out and seeing everything coming back to life. I mean, we are more in touch with nature than our eternal enemies ever will be.
Oh, yeah, 100%, dude. And if you're just going to drive yourself insane, just like sitting inside staring at a screen, like existing in this... like in this reality, right? The reality that they want you to be a part of. Just go outside. Make friends. Get to know your neighbor.
Yep. My loser this week is my eternal loser is journalism, but this one specifically is the Huffington Post and their new editor. My winner kind of crosses over with DK's is the Evergreen ship. It's, you have, what is it, one-third of the world's globalist trade comes to a stop because of one ship. And then I kind of have a side loser is a spiritual Jew, Matt Brannig, who wants to ban gas ovens. Oh my God. You can't write this stuff. If I made it up, you would not believe me. But and I guess my topic is the ongoing failures, and yet they're still continuing their overreach, the faggot Bureau of Instigation and all their continued works and failures.
Well, I have all this stuff pulled up, so whatever you guys want to start with, if it's something.
Let's start with the discussion of the ship, because it's probably, I think it's an interesting thing. So I presumably everybody has heard, although I funnily enough, it's not as much of a national news story as I don't know how, I guess I don't watch cable news, so I don't really know, but it doesn't seem to be getting a whole lot of press.
I never heard of this before, Dharma.
Oh, really? Like, unironically?
Yeah, so let's give it a base. I swear to, like, yeah. I didn't even know about this.
So one of these big container ships.
Mega tankers.
Literally the size of a skyscraper. Lost power to its engines under the command of its female captain. Haha. But apparently, I think
that's actually a meme.
The captain of the vessel is a female. But it wasn't under, because like any time that one of these ships goes through
into the canal, yeah,
you into the canal. Control. This is the same, pretty much any like the Panama Canal is the same way. Like you were required by the authority, the canal authority, to hand over like the control of the physical motion of your ship to tugboats, and it's kind of funny that it was a female captain, but she had no input on this. It was the tugboat error, so it looks like, or I guess anyway. So it crashed sideways, running aground, and because it's so long. It's actually the ship itself is longer than the width of the canal by a little. So it's completely
even at a 45 degree angle, it's longer.
Exactly.
It's not even not even if it was 90 degrees. I mean, it would not even fit 90 degrees. But even at 45 degrees, it's blocking the entirety of the canal.
So this ship has accomplished like what the Arab nationalists under Nasser never did, which is completely shut down the Suez Canal. And for
context, one third of the world's global trade of cargo goods goes through the Suez Canal.
It's the artery from Asia to Europe. Like, just look at a map. Like, if you don't want to go,
I think they said the dollar amount is something like $400 million an hour.
It's like $9 billion. It's like $10 billion. $19 billion with a B every day. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of that is kind of like
goods go through a day, and now it's stopped. And it's been stopped for like 4 days now.
Holy shit. So,
yes. It's like, it'll be a week in a couple. And it's almost a week. And if you look at a map, if you want to get something from like a Chinese or Taiwanese factory to Europe, like, if you don't want to go all the way around Africa, which ships are now kind of starting to have to do because it's like it takes about 10 to 14 days to traverse all the way around Africa. It's also more dangerous because you got the Somali pirates and so on. So if you don't want to do that, then you literally physically have no alternative but to go through the Suez Canal.
Can I add something? It's also that a lot of these cargo ships are not made for open ocean. Even if they had the option to go around the Horn of Africa, they can't.
Point. Yeah,
like at least a good portion of these ships are not seaworthy in those kind of waters. They're made for going through the Mediterranean and the Suez Canal and staying close to shore. So just FYI, like, have you actually seen the satellite photo of? It's like one. It shows the Suez Canal and all the ships lined up through there.
It's wild.
And then they have and underneath it, somebody put a picture of the Cape, the Southern Horn of Africa. And all the ships going around, and it's above. It says, "Reject modernity, return to tradition."
Yeah, that's awesome, dude.
That's why they dug the canal in the first place, right? Is because up until quite recently, that was the only way to get goods. That was like our forefathers, the European explorers. Like that's what they had to do to sail to China, to Asia, was go all the way around Africa. If you didn't want to go over land, which was even worse,
portaging. I said port. I think, but that's like taking.
You want to portage a 900 billion ton? Yeah. That's gonna take every Zulu in Africa to get that thing across the continent.
Well, no, they gotta just get back in touch with the airbending stuff. Do like a bunch of like mumbo jumbo dances to move these things, like the element. You guys familiar with what I'm talking about?
I started getting pictures in my mind of the flying pyramids.
Yeah, we don't have to. Never mind. Sorry, I interrupted you there, Dharma.
No, it's cool. The main reason apart from it's just kind of general newsworthiness and the kind of meta political point that it's interesting that, you know, the media went full nuclear meltdown over Tiger Woods, and this is like way more of a story and just hasn't, it's crickets mostly. I think it's, you know, again, this is yet another win for, you know, collapse, and just demonstrates yet again how fragile our entire, like, this post-industrial economic system is. You know, people haven't started losing their shirts yet, but just imagine, you know, like, if this is like one incident with one accident that isn't even really that bad, you know, it's not entirely clear. Obviously, it'll be resolved, and it probably won't take, it's not going to be like, you know, shut down for months. They'll figure something out, or you know, and it'll be temporary and blah, blah, blah. But just imagine like what a couple dedicated, you know, individuals with access to not that complicated technology could do to shut down, you know, this canal or the Panama Canal or both, right? Like, we have these choke points. This whole thing is running on a knife edge, and it really doesn't take that much to bring it grinding to a halt.
Yeah.
I think that that point is almost emphasized by, or underscored rather by, have you seen the photo of like this little bobcat that the Egyptians pulled out there to try to push the ship?
Oh, yeah, the nose. Right, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, it's like, I can't even give the proportions, but it's like the most, but it's like, boy, he's trying. Got to give him credit. He's trying.
So I got to ask, what are they going to do? Like, are they going to take the boat apart?
They haven't figured it out yet. They have not
figured it out. So Minesweeper asked, why don't they blow it the fuck up? Which is a normal question. The problem is, that would just create a lot of, that would create a debris field. That's actually what I was referring to with like the enterprising individuals bit that I just did. Maybe it was a little too abstruse. If you blow up a ship in the middle of the Panama Canal or the Suez Canal, now you've created a navigation hazard that makes it literally impassable.
I think it's not very deep. So whatever sinks is going to be a blockage as well.
They're like landmines, but they don't explode. Oh, what's up?
Borzoi has joined.
I became that meme of like, babe, we're doing a podcast. Come over. Like, no, I can't. We're talking about collapse and the guy running.
Hey Borzoi, I'll have you know, you'll be very happy to know that this started this morning with a immediate audio mistake.
Nice.
I want it preserved. I want it in the show. Anyway, sorry, go on.
Oh, I'm going to let you, if you guys are, I got a story to tell from last night, but I want to let you guys wrap up this conversation on the Evergreen.
I think, we could wrap it up, but why don't, I mean, I feel like you must have stuff to say.
Unfortunately, I haven't really been following this. I laughed when I saw it, and I also was amused from a, because I have some, a lot of people don't understand how the global supply chain works. And I mean, we've discussed this before when the pandemic stuff had started, because the disruptions can cause a lot of issues depending on the type of company you're in.
It's like a cascade effect.
Yeah.
Can I tell a funny story about this? So one of my first thoughts, this is just very quickly, like I was jamming on the refresh button on the Walmart app, and I managed to successfully order a PlayStation 5. Like a few days ago, and one of my first thoughts when I saw that was like, "Fuck, cucked by the Evergreen."
Yeah, and so if people don't know, I mean, a lot of companies have just in time inventory. They don't keep there isn't a giant Scrooge McDuck silo full of all the parts or products that they need to ship out. This thing is done basically; it's constantly done in time, and so when you have logistics mess ups like this, when you have disruptions like this, it causes the cascade effect, as Spectre said. Now, the thing that people need to watch out for, especially when they're hoping for some kind of global economic collapse, is supply chain and the logistics spends a lot of money to think about how do we prevent problems from occurring? How do we prepare for catastrophic problems? Now that when that happens, they try to have a game plan in place, and there will be disruptions, but they're working overtime to make sure there aren't any real problems, and it's not going to take the global economy isn't going to take the hit that they're afraid it's going to take the hit on. So it kind of remains to be seen. It's going to be one of those things where people need to take it as this is just another performance indicator in how bad things are. But this is not going to be the killing blow. It's just another drip, drip, drip that's happening.
On that note, though, my new favorite conspiracy theory, hot off the thing, is because apparently just that morning, I guess it was Tuesday morning before the thing happened, the ship ran aground. Both Jerome Powell and Janet Yellen were testifying in Congress, and both said that they thought that the stock market was just too damn high. And, you know, next thing you know, of course, this like knocks stocks down a peg. It's kind of fun. I mean, obviously the market has already kind of priced it in, and it's not, didn't cause it, just,
yeah, it was just a little blip on the market so far.
Right. But I just thought that was funny.
But it is interesting to see how little it takes to bring to a halt 1/3 of the world's shipping. I mean, there are vulnerabilities in the system that are so fragile that, you know, something as simple as, you know, having some Pajits with tugboats, you know, not paying attention, you know, maybe taking a shit off the side of the boat or something. And all of a sudden, boom, you're losing, you know, $9 billion a day. So
exactly. And I don't want to I want to be very clear here that I would never, you know, this is all just in a video game that I played once.
Drunk and retarded.
While drunk and very, very retarded. You know, it occurred to me that in this video game that, like, you know, urban centers in the United States are, like, you know, in kind of precarious, like they barely function on a good day.
Right.
And if you can, you know, shut down a highway or, you know, a power plant or something, like that's a big problem.
Indeed.
I think Siege Baby agrees.
If you guys have nothing else you want, so because I have places to be today, which is why I couldn't be on the show. But I thought this would be the interesting story to tell you guys. You guys want to hear my story from last night?
Absolutely.
Yes, please.
So we had a men's get together last night, and there was towards the end of the night, one of a relative of mine, basically like an in-law. I kind of already said who it was, but basically like the husband of one of my cousins. I don't know how we got on the topic. He's asking me about Eastern Orthodox. He's like, this guy's like actually like interested in the theology. And I've known this guy for almost 10 years. This guy's actually interested in the theology of Eastern Orthodoxy. Okay, where's this going? Well, Kassad, my buddy who came over, who I had the same process with, I don't know how they got on the topic of it, but he starts talking to him about how he was talking to me about this transgender stuff. And that really piqued his interest. And so we got on the topic of the Frankfurt. He brought up the Frankfurt School for me. He's like, okay, I know exactly how I can grease the skids on this one. Because when somebody comes up to you and is like, this is when you're presented a golden opportunity. This is the what I want to illustrate the story. When you're presented a golden opportunity with something like this, you have to take it, but you have to know how to grease those skids correctly. Because we get on this whole thing about what the Frankfurt School was and what the and what they were trying to achieve. I mentioned casually, well, you know, a lot of them were Jewish. So for a lot of them, it was about preventing another national socialist Germany from rising. And I just kind of put that out there, but didn't linger on it, moved on to the next thing. But I figured out a way to explain some of the stuff to people that I think guys should utilize whenever you have an opportunity for something like this. Because what I said to him was, well, here's the thing you need to understand about the Frankfurt School and communism, because a lot of guys will try to use, like, well, it's the communists in order to try and get a foot in the door. That's not a bad start, but what you got to do, how you got to explain this to them. So, well, it's not really ideological. It's a domination strategy. And he says to me, well, what do you mean by that? It's like, okay, I mean, you have these, what they want, they see us as the enemy, and so they want to destroy us. And how do you do that? Well, you undermine them, and here's how you do it. And here's how I illustrated the example to them. It's like, you know, like, let's say all of us here right now, we're our own tribe, and there's a tribe across the street, and we want to destroy that tribe. Now, we could just go over there and try and fight them, but perhaps they outnumber us, perhaps they're stronger than us, perhaps they're, you know, there's many reasons why maybe we just don't want to take that risk. Here's a better way. What if I went over there, pretended to be their friend, and said, hey guys, you know, we're all here, but isn't this idea of a tribe kind of stupid? Isn't it kind of silly? Aren't we all just kind of individuals that are making up this kind of arbitrary group? Doesn't really seem to make much sense for us to be doing that kind of thing. We should celebrate our individuality, and we should celebrate what makes us unique and what makes us so diverse. And we shouldn't have this idea of tribe. Well, now they're divided. Now we can just go mess them up individually and destroy them. And he looks at me, and you can see the wheels in his head turns. Like, you know, I never thought of it like that. I never even thought
nice.
Of this idea of, like, wait, you can use... Because I noticed he was falling into the trap of thinking things in terms of ideology.
Yes.
And one thing we struggle with is, like, how do we take people away from the abstract and back to the concrete? Because they keep leaning back on that. In fact, at one point he said, well, they're undermining a constitutional republic. And I just looked at him like, the Constitution doesn't matter, dude.
It's just an obstacle.
he stopped. And he's like, because he had never heard somebody just speak so bluntly about that stuff before. And he says,
I like that approach.
He says to me, I think you and I need to sit down. Why don't you and your wife come have dinner with me and my wife sometime? I think I need to talk to you about some things.
I have this podcast.
Well, Kassad,
believe it or not, I've written a book.
Well, no, actually, Kassad and I debated if I should give him a copy of my book, not tell him that I wrote it. And I thought it was a good idea because he would have, with the way that I was talking, he was really responding to a lot of it. The only thing I'm concerned about is he would by the end of the book, he'd figure out it was me. And that's a variable I can't control when I have such a large family. I mean, especially when somebody's like, hey, did you know he has a book? And it's like, no, I don't want to deal with that in my family when I can't control every single variable right there.
Wait, your name's not John Chapman.
Yeah. What the heck? So wait a minute. You're not Johnny Appleseed?
I don't get it.
I might give him a copy of the Transgender Industrial Complex, because and this is probably true for a lot of you guys too. A lot the transgender stuff is how a lot of us are getting our foot in the door right now. Because that was also my biggest
red pill. Like I mean, it's funny because I guess I always had certain, you know, leanings or whatever, but it was really the 2012, 2013 era transgender stuff, which I was always opposed to, but that was kind of like understood to be just a normal position. And then as that started, just like not liking it became more and more of a kind of radical right wing perspective as portrayed by the, you know, mainstream media or whatever. I just dug my heels in more and more, and that's kind of how I ended up here. And yeah, it's a big deal, even among normies.
And so I wanted to say this example because I often tell people you need to meet people where they are. And that's a nice thing, an easy thing to say. But for a lot of people, well, what do you mean by that? And I want to illustrate that with that example. That I knew exactly where he was with the way he was presenting things to me about Orthodox. Okay, so he's interested in Orthodoxy, so he's religious. He brings up the Frankfurt School to me. So he's got this, he's keyed into that there's this idea of subversion and that wokeism, because he kept using that term a lot. Wokeism kind of comes from that. Okay, that's where I start. And I have to work within that, provide a couple of things that will take him off of what the conservative path they want him to go on without coming too much as like an opposing force. And so that's what I mean when you have to meet people where they are. If you start talking to people about the things that perhaps you're a little bit more of a World War II historian. For some people, that's just not going to work as an early entry point. Now, for some people, that actually does. I was, when I had similar conversations with Kassad, he was the one who actually brought up to me, like, so everything in World War II was bullshit, wasn't it? I was like, I did not expect the conversation to go in that direction. But yeah, everyone's a little bit different. So that's when I say you have to meet people where they are, listen to what they're saying to you, and figure out how you can talk to them without going too hard too quickly. But you want to make sure you just pepper it just enough that it gets the wheels turning and they want to know more, because a lot of it's going to be trying to get them to try to figure this stuff out on their own. If you will be successful, I hate to do a Futurama quote, but when you do things right, people won't be sure you did anything at all.
Fair enough. No, I mean, it's always better to lead somebody, like lay the breadcrumbs and let them come to the conclusions rather than you trying to like pound them in the head with it, because they'll very easily revert back to their mean.
Well, the other aspect of that as well is because they're so bombarded with media messaging that, oh, people are being brainwashed into the stuff, they're being tricked into being racist, or like they fell down the rabbit hole. It gives us this sinister quality that somebody is pulling a fast one on them, or they're being, you know, brainwashed into a cult or some kind. It's like, no, if they feel like they figured it out on their own, which oftentimes they do figure it out on their own with help, then they're not going to have that problem. It's like, well, no, I wasn't brainwashed. Once I started thinking about it, it made too much sense.
Yeah, yeah. This sounds a lot like the plot in Inception. You know how, like, whenever they're planting that, it'll be rejected. Like what you're saying, the idea would be rejected if it's something that he didn't.
Yeah, but I gotta get ready for our thing today. But I figured you guys would appreciate that story and
absolutely.
I want to give people an example of here's how you talk. You know, once
thanks for sharing.
With
yeah.
an opportunity, you take that and you just work within what they're giving you. So my manner bun is going to continue to grow. I'm very optimistic about talking to this relative.
Sweet. All right. Well, have fun today,
Borzoi.
What?
I said have fun today.
Yep. Thank you. Thank you, guys. Thank you for letting me hop on for a second.
It's your podcast. Borzoi, thanks for having me, guys. Hopefully I can come back again soon.
Yeah. Let's see if we can squeeze you in there, Borzoi.
Please invite me on the third rail again sometime. This is a pretty good podcast. I would love to come on here more and talk about the ideas that I've developed over the years.
Yes, this dynamic's really, really cool. Whoever came up with this must be a fucking genius, am I right?
All right, see you later, guys. I gotta go get ready.
Have a good one.
Right. Oh, going back to the Suez Canal just for a half a second, did anybody see where they were talking about how because the Suez Canal is so important and it's so, you know, precarious, that there was a plan in like the 1960s to dig a canal through from the Mediterranean through Israel to the Gulf of Aqaba, which connects back up to the Red Sea. And they were going to use 560 nukes to dig this canal. And I'm thinking, dropping 560 nukes on Israel, stop. I can only get so erect.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. It's like, was that an actual plan or was this something you just made up?
No, I honestly didn't make it up. I can't attest to whether it was just like a made up meme, like a screenshot kind of a thing. But I saw it and it was just too good not to believe. So I choose to believe it.
Well, man, that's your truth. You know what I'm saying? That's just
exactly.
No one encroach on your truth, man.
So. All right. Before he so rudely interrupted us and distracted us. What the hell were we talking about?
I think we just went through my winner, which is also, I guess, okay. Your winner or loser or yeah. One of the two. Yeah.
Yeah. Hello, Siege Baby.
I was gonna say, yeah, I'm not going to be able to talk. I mean, if I'm going to do my winner and I don't want to talk about like Spectre Co. He lost all this weight.
No, I'm actually haven't lost that much yet, but it's the intermittent fasting is the start of the shedding. So I'm happy about that.
So he's not actually a loser yet.
No, unfortunately, I'm still a winner. I'm a winner, Mikey. I don't know if you want to pull this up. This is the Philadelphia Tribune story link that I sent you. I don't know if you can show the picture in that chat, but you know how much I take Schadenfreude in the decline and death of American journalism as it stands. The Huffington Post, like just last month, shed, 57, 47 of its, like about a third of its staff of journalists, including a particular Antifa shit blogger who really has never made a name for himself. He just likes to, run around and tattle on good people. But the decline, and this also came like a couple of weeks after the Huffington Post newsroom had unionized, which is fucking hilarious. Hey, we've got a union now. Hey, we're laying off a third of the workforce. But
Huffington Post,
The first Huffington Post editor was Ariane Huffington, who kept that job from like when she founded it in 2006 or 2007 until 2017. And she was a piece of shit as it was. She married some gay Republican. Well, I guess that's all Republicans. But she was a piece of shit. But her replacement was I forgot her first name. Polly Green, this Jewish lesbian who was just goddamn awful.
Polygon.
One of the those kind of polygon. Polygon, something like
Polygon's
that.
A Pokemon.
There you go. Might as well have been, I guess. But now they've hired Precious here. and she was the editor over at The Root. And if you don't know who The Root is, it's basically where edumacated blacks go to pretend that they're journalists. Like last week, there was a little bit of a dust up because one of their writers, Damon Root, wrote that article that people were passing around about how we have to eliminate the virus of white supremacy and white privilege. We have to eliminate everybody that it could possibly infect. I mean, he's basically calling for white genocide. But of course, you know, the usual suspects show up and, well, he's not talking about actual white people, but the concept of, I don't believe you. I'm sorry. I just don't believe you. You can, you know, try to spin that, but it's not going to like confuse me. I know what you're saying when you say that.
It's like, dude, that shit makes me so mad too. It's like as if these two are separable. You know what I mean? It's like, if I was to say like, oh, blackness, it's like, get the fuck out of here. It's like, no, this is just like nigger behavior is all this is. Like, that's what this
is. I don't have anything against Jewish people. Jewish people should be allowed to continue to live. It's Jewishness that's a virus that needs to be stamped out.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, I mean, I don't even get mad at it anymore because it's just so disingenuous. I mean, you know, they say it's that whole confused, the guy in the straitjacket meme where it's like whiteness doesn't exist, but we have to exist whites. Well, we have to get rid of white supremacy. And also race doesn't exist, but white people are bad and blah, blah, blah. And it's just like, I'm sorry. I don't believe you. And you're going to have to try a lot harder because this doesn't work on me. I don't even get mad at it. I'm just like, I just reject you and your premise at the very start of it. And I'm going to point out that go tell black people that race doesn't exist. Don't go tell them that they're not really black. Go tell them that we can eliminate blackness and it won't hurt black people.
Well, that's all the proof that you need, Spectre, to know that there is just like an outright, it's just an outright war on whites in America and all over the fucking planet, to be honest. I mean, that, like, yeah, I don't know, everything.
No, it's I'll
be right back. Sorry.
I guess, no, that's okay. I guess the bottom line here is when, you know, you take the Huffington Post, and it was never anything but a shitty blog for cat ladies and Antifa goons and, you know, these little psychotic lunatics with their own little, you know, specialty. I mean, they're the only thing that made them better than Vice is that generally you didn't have like stories like, I took MDMA and put 5 dildos in my butt to see what happened. Please don't isolate that drop. You know, they at least pretended, and then bringing on somebody like this editor from The Root, it's kind of like, I guess, I don't know the best analogy here, bringing on a night manager from McDonald's and saying, we're going to put you in charge of Morton Steakhouse, except for it was, you know, Huffington Post was never a steakhouse. It's just, that's how far above The Root this was. So they're bringing in the shit tier editor who, you know, can't spell her own fucking name and who everything's going to be that, to the degree that the Huffington Post is not through the lens of race. It's all going to be white grievance. It's all going to be how everything's white supremacy, how that, you know, the Muslim guy who shot up the grocery store in Boulder, Colorado, that's he's a victim of white supremacy. It's just all going to be the same thing. It's just going to get, but it's going to be lowered in IQ. It's going to revert to a lower mean IQ. It's going to be, it's just, it tells you that they're on their way down. They're on their way out.
That's the thing. I mean, not to put too fine a point on it, they didn't lay off all those people because they were doing well financially. And this is obviously not going to improve their financial situation. I mean, the flip side of that is obviously they don't exist to make a profit. Like Arianna Huffington, she made quite a lot of money when she sold it. And I don't think it's, I think it was like with, who was it? Yahoo bought, or somebody bought Yahoo, I don't remember. Yeah, it's purple. I don't remember.
God, I love kids.
I don't remember, you know, who did it. But basically, you know, this is just one of these purchases that they're never going to make their money on. But they don't. It's not about making money, right? It's about sending a message.
Well, no, and that's a mistake we often make is by going to the, you know, the stereotype of that, you know, Jews are only interested in money. That's actually not at all true. It's more about power. And something like the Huffington Post and all of its clones, Gawker and all the, you know, the shit tier, Mary Sue, this and that, Kotaku, all of these clickbait factories, they don't exist to make money because they don't. Now, they're trying to, like, stop the hemorrhaging just because there's only so long that you can get people to throw money away. But it's about advancing a narrative. It's about, you know, pretending that this is what the consensus of elite and you know, the chattering class believe. When in fact, these people are like the scum of the earth. They're literally just apartment dwelling bloggers living like 5 or 6 to a little rat hole up in Williamsburg in Brooklyn and all that, and, you know, writing garbage pieces because their parents hate them and they hate their parents. That's all these things are.
Well, another thing too that this I think this is I mean, as they're like starting to like negrify all of these news outlets and whatnot, they're really just replacing and redefining what news actually is. Like the Suez Canal, you guys mentioned that this isn't really being blown up to what it really should be. Like, that's a big deal. That's like that's a fucking catastrophe. But they're not talking about it. Instead, they're talking about like racism and all this other bullshit. Where what we grew up with as media isn't going to be what media is. It's like the Root is transitioning into like the New York Times, right? Like that style of media is going to be like the New York Times-esque media in like 50. Like,
oh, the New York Times is already approaching these levels of like shittiness.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, have you ever read a Charles Blow column in the New York Times?
Oh,
it's basically like a Root columnist at the New York Times.
Well, yeah, and it's going to be like totally like that. I don't think there's going to be like any actual discussions happening for like the plebs. This is all going to be stuff that happens in like boardrooms and whatnot, and as they like funnel out this fucking garbage for us, like where it's going to be all about pop culture and whitey being the devil and shit like that, and they're going to be actually having discussion about important.
Yeah, and I said earlier that this was about, you know, they don't mind losing money as long as they can control the narrative and squash the counter narrative, but it's also about pushing the Finkel think out there, because then we get distracted with shit that doesn't matter. Like, you know, the things that trend, whether it's on Twitter or in the news or whatever, on a day-to-day clickbait basis, you know, they have actual no real consequence. All they are is there to distract the left and distract the right from what's really going on. You see it. I mean, was some stupid story I read about some guy complaining about getting trip tails in his Cinnamon Toast Crunch. And for a day that became viral because it was like, oh, wow. And look how the company responded and blah, blah, blah. And this is so funny on Twitter or whatever. And then, oh, you know, as soon as this guy comes out, he's apparently some artist or writer out in L.A. And the next day, a whole bunch of women could go to BuzzFeed and say, oh, he's a shitty boyfriend. He was abusive. He's a terrible person. We're going to Me Too him. And everybody starts talking about that. And then and it's like, well, what happened in the meanwhile? You didn't get your stimulus. You aren't going to get your minimum wage hike. We're going to be gearing up for war in Syria. All the more important things that are happening that really they don't want you to have any input on, much less even know about.
Yeah. And that'll be like that'll make it easier for them to just do as they, you
know. Somebody says HuffPost editor Daniel Belton looks like she could have blocked the Suez Canal.
Yeah. And on what you just said, you know, I think that Lil Wayne said it best when he said real G's move in silence like lasagna. That's how the government at moving whenever it gets magnified like 15 times past where we are right now.
Oh my god. Yep. So yeah, anyway, I didn't mean for this to take that long, just on just the content. I mean, imagine you're already as shit tier as the Huffington Post, and then you're told this is your new editor, and you just got to be sitting there going, oh God.
Well, no, they're probably sitting there like this
like
is great.
It's like the dead Wojak meme, just like, oh God.
No, they're probably so happy. They're like, yes, finally, some actual journalism be like brought to the table. Like, the people that work there they don't think about things the way we do, you know what I mean?
Yeah, because the Huffington Post doesn't have enough black voices and enough race voices. I mean, it's just, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, the Huffington Post doesn't have enough black voices. T, the last white person that works.
Anyway, I guess that was my loser of the week, but anybody else got anything? I've got a couple more things, but I just want to monopolize the floor.
While we're on the topic, you want to do the black surfers?
Sure.
Well, I got some bad news about that. So the article that I pulled up is like, it's wanting me to like subscribe to shit. I'm not doing that. So I'll just tell you guys the story. So here's what happened. There was a bunch of, well, here, I have this over here. So localism at the Manhattan Beach Pier triggers racial reckoning for surfers. So on President's Day, a middle-aged white surfer hassled two 24-year-old blacks in the lineup at the Manhattan.
Citation needed.
Yeah, dude. Well, I mean, they have pictures of these like groids in the fucking water and whatnot, but it's, I mean, I was reading this story about these clowns. They're out there surfing, and it sounded to me like what happened is these dudes are, like, cutting people off in the water.
Mm-hmm.
And the white surfers were like, what the fuck? You know what I mean? Like, as any person would do. I mean, honestly, when you think of, like, white surfers, is that
No, they have a strict code on racism,
though? They have a code of conduct.
No. Not racist, no. No, they have a code of conduct, though, that's pretty, you know, strict as far as I understand it.
Yeah, and they're talking. Yeah, they mentioned that in the LA, but these guys, apparently, they were called nigger, right? They're called nigger. And they said that this was caught on a cell phone camera, but how could that be if it was in the fucking ocean?
Well, and what they probably caught was supposedly the moment after the word was said.
Well, yeah, because I think...
Because that's the way it always... The video always starts right after they say...
Yeah, they never, ever capture that, you know?
Oh, yeah. Here it is, actually. So this dude that caught the thing, the incident might have just been dismissed as another stain on the soul of surfing, right? Because, like, racism, a giant stain on the soul of surfing. I never even, like, would have... surfers probably would have been, like, the last people, but they're coming for them, too, right?
Anything that's a largely white space is going to be invaded by, you know, interest, and then they're going to immediately make complaints about how they're not being welcomed and, you know, complain about how they're, you know, therefore this whole thing needs to be fundamentally reformed and restructured to put black people at the top.
Here it is. So this might have just, it's another stain, right? So described in a 2000 essay, Rashidi Kafel visited his chiropractor that morning. Robert Bates, whose Highland Avenue office is two blocks up from... So Kafel decides that he said, I'm going to stretch my legs out, right? I'm going to stretch my legs out. And he recalls in the morning, he says, yo, I saw two blacks surfing, which is unusual. I would say so. He said, so I started taking pictures with my phone, and then I heard the word nigga. Kafel is black, right? His photos didn't have audio, so we're just going to have to take their word for it, right?
Right.
So this turns into... These guys now are like doing a whole bunch of activism, and there's like a bunch of these... organizations set up, I fucking wish it up, where they're like trying to encourage more minority participation. They're like,
that's what I'm saying, here it comes. We need, and then now they're gonna have to, because there's racism, we have to like make special allowances and also maybe a special grading track on those surf competitions, you know, to help blacks who've been historically denied access to surfing. Yeah. For some reason.
So this incident began with a teenage burning brick on a wave, which, whatever. Their boards collide, and the local's board breaks. When Brick is one of the groids. Brick. His name is Brick, and the other guy's name is Gage. Brick and Gage. So when Brick is paddling back out, he gets in the way of another teenage surfer, right? So then a third teenage surfer yells at him, this is a local's beach, get out of the fucking way. I mean, there's not a whole lot of, like groid talk here, not calling like dropping N bombs anywhere. This is so it's really all just fucking hearsay. And then they have, oh, here's the picture. They took a picture. And this dude's like splashing. It's in the ocean. But I don't know. I just thought it was, I was reading it and thought it was something that, yeah, the white surfer responds. Brick says in the video, oh, you're calling me a nigger now? So you know how that goes. Like the white was,
so we literally have no evidence of this.
None whatsoever. So this guy is like, imagine, like, you're having a conversation with a fucking groid, and then he's like, oh, you call me a nigga now? Yeah, whether you did or not. Like, I mean, you've just taken the situation from fucking 0 to 100, like, right there. I mean, yeah. all cell phone cameras are at that point, but we don't have any audio of this fucking shit. Like,
no, of course not. Hey, this is like, what was it? The, I don't follow sports ball much anymore, but I don't know if it was the Super Bowl or a previous game where supposedly Tom Brady called some defensive lineman the N-word.
Oh, yeah.
Everything was caught on camera was him like doing an illegal hit on Brady and like trying to start a fight. And then, of course, afterwards, he's like, well, I heard him call me the N-word.
And yeah, like, that's just your get-out-of-jail-free card, nigga. That's all that
is. It is. It absolutely is. And I just guarantee you that, I mean, I'm sorry, but Southern California surfer types, laid-back, pot-smoking, white dudes who probably are steeped in the whole modern multicultural bullshit, and they just, all they want to do is surf. Somebody violates their rules, which is, you know, you don't cut somebody off, you don't steal somebody's wave, et cetera. So I don't know anything about surfing except for what I've seen in surf movies. But you know, and basically they go out there and act like black people, and then they get called, hey, stop doing that, stop cutting in line, stop blah blah blah. And what, you calling me an N-word? No, I don't believe you. I'm sorry. I don't believe you.
Well, then, dude, it goes on here. So I guess, like, either they heard this groid say, like, oh, you calling me that? You calling me a nigga now, dog? Yeah, so apparently the teenage surfer who yelled at Brick for getting in his way later paddled over to him and said, bro, my bad. I didn't mean that. And then the other two teenage surfers did as well. But get this. When they paddled
they
in,
out.
Oh, dude, it gets insane. And you'll see that cucking doesn't pay. But when they paddled in, an older Manhattan Beach resident who had witnessed the confrontation from the pier, just saw it, didn't hear it, stopped the groids to apologize on behalf of his town. And he said, we don't tolerate that behavior in Manhattan Beach. I've never seen anything like it before. Then he called a lifeguard. And the lifeguard told the Groids that those kids, the dudes, the teenagers who just apologized, will keep an eye out and tell the guy he's not welcome back. So they're like kicked off the beach now. Like,
okay, David Hasselhoff. Use that authority. I'm sure. And then I don't believe this, and I feel like these people are probably. I mean, again, Southern California beach people. The lifeguard probably only just assumed that if the black guy said, you know, made the accusation, it must be true.
Yeah.
So.
Because I mean, they're the real possessors of truth. And then I just thought this.
Over the following few days, Brick and Chrisman used social media to promote. You got to scroll down a little further. It looks like they had an event planned.
Oh, they did.
For Black Surfer. Oh, and they needed an incident to draw social media. Wow, what a coincidence. What a coincidence. A day before they had some event, they got exactly the kind of reaction that they wanted.
Well, dude, another thing, too, is they were like, yeah, after the George... What, dude, it's not in this article, but after the George Floyd shit and, like, the Ahmaud Arbery thing, they got 100 Groids together, and they all, like, paddled out on surfboards and, like, held hands in the ocean, they said. But yeah, to like draw attention to like Black Lives and shit like that. But yeah, here it is. Last year, following the paddle out in memory of George Floyd, they co-founded the environmental and social justice nonprofit One Planet, One People.
Yeah.
Yeah, then I don't know. And then here's the typical thing, you know, and I'm thinking, why are people calling me? This isn't a black surfer problem. It's an every surfer problem. So it's like, there you go. This is Whitey's problem. He sorted out himself, right?
From the comments, David Hasselin them nibbas off the beach.
Yeah.
Hasselhoff and them niggas off the beach. Oh my God.
And this is great here. We can just like talk about something else because I mean, this is just typical stuff. No one's surprised by this, but
it's TNB.
Just Groids being Groids, bro.
So Rye Harris later on says, yo, I surfed in motherfucking South Bay for 20 years, man, and no one never called me a nigga in the water. Though maybe that's just because I'm a big, loud black man.
Nope, nobody called these people. Like, does anybody actually believe? I'm still caught up on this. Like, I don't think they believe it. I don't think the person who wrote this believes it. Like, nobody believes this.
No, they're just disingenuous liars. Remember, though, all authors are liars.
That's true.
Yeah, I'm just kidding.
I mean, like literally, if you walk up to a black person in a supermarket who's talking into their speakerphone, because that's what they all do. And you say, can you please, you know, that's really loud and distracting. Do you mind talking on the phone like a person? Did you just call me an N-word? Yeah. That's what you're going to get.
No, I'm not going to shine your shoes.
Nobody believes it. Nobody believes it. And anybody who says they are is lying.
But that was the topic that I brought. We got niggers on niggers with attitudes out in the ocean. we thought that like swimming would be the barrier to keep them out, but they're evolving. So chimps with webbed feet, dude. Fucking.
Well, I mean, okay, you saw this with the Bubba Wallace thing. You know, black guy tries to gain entryism into a predominantly dominated by white people sport, and of course he has to have an incident where he, you know, accuses them of, you know, a fake incident where he accuses, you know, the people in the sport and all the fans of racism. And then he gets, you know, oh, all the sympathy and oh, all the corporate sponsorships and oh, we need to do stuff to make sure that more blacks are welcome and therefore more whites are not welcome into this sport. That's all this is.
We need to kick whites off, give black people.
Yes. Like, or just get rid of the locks on the surfboards when they're not being used.
Give them your surfboard.
I still love that line from Alex McNabb about, well, if you want to get more blacks into bicycling, just tell white people that they can't lock their bikes anymore.
Yeah, but I mean, would they really be cyclists or would they just professional thieves? Because they wouldn't be riding bikes at that point. It would turn into some sort of like black market, like a little black market where they just steal the bikes and sell them to Groid buddies. Maybe get some like, you know,
put them on eBay,
like some
Barack and then kill a person who comes to buy it.
Yeah, how about it? Yo, nigga, I sold this bike 100 times. Never changed hands, but
well, it's sad that we're laughing about that, but that actually happened.
Oh yeah,
I think it was in reverse. I think the white guy was the one trying to sell the motorbike or something like that, like a dirt bike or something.
And he didn't kill the Groid to keep the bike. The Groid killed him. And
no, exactly. So, DK, what have you got?
I got this segment by Tucker. If we want to maybe transition hard into that,
sure.
I think I was getting some snippy little comments in the chat, which is fine. I mean, it's true. I you know, maybe to preface this, I used to unironically watch Tucker
I'm still convinced. I don't know.
Guilty here too.
Well, the thing is, so it's clear in retrospect that you know, halfway based Blake Neff, who was done dirty by Tucker, was responsible for a lot of his more based content. I think it's like, from what I understand, Blake Neff, you know, the writer who was doxxed as having been part, I guess he made some comments on Auto Admit, this kind of like whatever a niche internet forum that were they'd be racist against the Blagues, and so he was axed from the show. And there was a noticeable, immediate and very noticeable drop in, you know, Tucker's whole thing became transparently like way less good perspective.
Right.
And
well, you can tell Neff was like not just his head writer, but like driving the narrative hard.
Exactly. Well, he was clear. Like, yeah, all of our talking points were filtering to Tucker via Neff. So with that.
And line, it's 100% certain that he was listening to like.
Yeah, we know that for sure.
With a humiliation ritual.
Yeah. Exactly. So and then between that and his take on and basically just refusing to cover, because I understand our guys not covering the election fraud stuff, like from our perspective, it kind of doesn't even really matter. And then that's fine. But like for people who are invested in that, or for people who, you know, for whom it does matter to some extent, like it was clear, you know, what. Like there was a lot of angles to the story. You don't necessarily have to believe all the schizophrenic, you know, switching of, you know, the electronic stuff and the Sidney Powell stuff to, you know, there was a lot of illegal stuff that went down, and we have video and we have receipts, and Tucker didn't cover any of that. And so between sort of like the general decline in the quality of his stuff and that whole side of things, I was very thoroughly disillusioned with him and really, I just didn't even watch him for a while. Then, you know, and here's where it's like, I don't necessarily feel the need to justify myself, but you know, whatever. I wouldn't say that I watch him ironically so much as I think it's important for us to have a handle, have our finger on the pulse of like what the fake right wing of the Republican Party, or the, you know, the kosher right, is doing. Like, I'm not gonna, you know, sit here and say that I don't get any enjoyment whatsoever out of purely for research purposes or whatever. Like, that's not true, but it is true that I think he's worth watching, worth paying attention to what he's saying, just like it would be worth paying attention to what Josh Hawley and Ron DeSantis are saying. Because we need to know how to counter it. We need to know, like,
right,
you know,
right.
Where are we in relation to these people?
And on a relative scale, whether it's Tucker or Hawley that you're talking about, as far as being the kosher right, they are the smarter edge and the, I guess, the edgier edge of it. Then, I mean, like, as, let me pull an example out of my butt, Twitchy. If you want to see what Republican morons are saying on a day-to-day basis, you go to Twitchy. They have, I mean, they are so... They are the most inner layer of the kosher sandwich on the right hand side, because it is the stupidest. Well, Democrats are the real racists. I can't believe he said something bad about the Jews, kind of stuff.
Right. Yeah.
Whereas Tucker, because of the way he's, you know, pretty polished, he can come across like as if he's really transgressing the line.
And
even though he's not, he's still containing you.
Exactly. And the reason why I wanted to highlight this particular segment is because he does the most sophisticated DR3 that I've ever seen. It's still pretty dumb because it's just a retarded, it's a deliberately, I don't even know if retarded that now we talk, and Tucker's smart enough that you could sort of like, you know, it's malicious, right? But as DR3s go, as you'll see, like this is a very sophisticated DR3, and it's one that's like, I guess, you know, he's testing out narratives that I'm certain they're going to use moving forward, and we need to have a response prepared, because, you know, and Mike was saying this, and a bunch of other, you know, people, but Mike, I think, is in the past week or two has made a point of noting how I forget who it was, but it was Raheem Kassam or one of these types are like starting to echo our narratives, particularly on this Muslim shooter or this Arab shooter, ethnically Arab, I guess, more than religiously Muslim, who's just a libtard who murdered 10 white people because he hates white people. you know, that's an inconvenient thing for them. And they have, yeah, it's not funny, Siege Baby, but they have started to like have to echo some of our talking points for various reasons. And that's a good thing, but it also means we need to be on the lookout and sharpen even more. So why don't we start? We can start with this because the what he's describing is also interesting on its own.
Okay, so you guys you do know that you're not.
Good evening and welcome to Tucker Carlson.
Yeah,
tonight.
We won't be able to hear it, but the audience will. So
yeah, okay. So let's just go 3, 2, 1 and start, and then we can go.
Good evening and welcome to Tucker Carlson tonight. It's funny how no one really covers the big stories. Instead, the news media bring us minutia, all the time, cartloads of it. A middle-aged professional golfer hurts his leg in a car accident, and the networks go wall to wall. They gave his car crash more coverage than they gave the bombing of Syria, literally. Then a few weeks later, some weird fake duchess from L.A. gives a boring interview to Oprah, and we stop the presses. It's all we talked about for days. Meanwhile, something legitimately momentous happens, and it's crickets. Just yesterday, for example, two sitting members of the United States Senate announced that they oppose the entire foundation of American civil rights law and then proceeded to attack the core principle, the main principle of our country. Some people on Twitter were shocked by it, but otherwise...
Notice that the main principle of our country, right? Like,
I'm wondering what this is because I might actually agree with them for the wrong reasons.
The Minnesota and Mazie Hirono of Hawaii publicly informed the White House that until the Biden administration puts more people they like in powerful jobs, they will refuse to confirm any white nominees. Quote, I'm a no vote on the floor on all non-diversity nominees, Duckworth said out loud with cameras. I will vote for racial minorities and I will vote for LGBTQ. But anybody else, I'm not voting for. Just in case you missed it or unclear on the meaning, Duckworth said this several times. And then Mazie Hirono backed her up. Here's Hirono yesterday on MSNBC.
Tammy's position is that until she gets a commitment from the White House that there will be more diversity representation in the cabinet and senior White House advisory positions, she will not vote to confirm anyone who does not represent diversity. So this is not about pitting one diversity group against another. I think this is a well-articulated, focused position. And I am prepared to join her in that.
Can you pause for a second?
The administration has been adequately receptive to your entreaties.
Is everybody paused?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not even sure if I'm in the same place where you are. I'm at like 214, but
yeah, that's where I am.
Okay. Perfect. my very first thought is I kind of know exactly where Tucker's going
to
go.
We need to have more people being colorblind. We need the most qualified person for the job. That's what America is all about. But here's my problem, Tucker. What you have in front of you is a perfect example, a perfect piece of bait to hang out to your audience, which is largely probably 99% straight white people, and say, this is no longer about fairness, about our founding values. We are in a tribal conflict. And unless we start taking our own side and fighting the exact same way that they fight, we are going to always lose we will compromise and give ground. They will not. And therefore, that's why we have a shrinking white population. We have shrinking white power. It is because of this. You have to fucking take your own side, be unapologetic about it and say, I am only going to nominate and or vote for the confirmation of people who are like me and share my values and my tribe, my folk.
Exactly, dude. And it's like, you can't take the country in any direction whatsoever. You know what I mean? If you don't have cohesion, there is cohesion, but it's all cohesion in the wrong direction. And this is an open declaration
Declaration of war against white people.
Exactly. Like an open declaration. Yeah. I mean, to come out and say this shit, I mean, Tucker, tell who is it that they're not voting for? What does that mean? What does non-diverse mean? Say it. What does it mean?
So you're absolutely right, Spectre, where you see this, where he's going with this. Although the reason why I'm highlighting this is because it's particularly insidious. Like he is like leveled up in his approach, or he is aware that some of his more kind of colorblind talking points, colorblind meritocracy that he was advocating for a few months ago, like that clearly that's not going to fly. So he frames it more, as you'll see, in terms of a warning.
And then with a kind of very sly redefinition of what America even is, which we'll see. But yeah, he frames it more as like, if the Democrats and the left continue down this road, then there will be open racial conflict, which, of course, the obvious and immediate rejoinder should be, we're already in it, dude. And,
exactly.
And it's
and
not.
He's warning, and he honestly, he's warning against it like it's a bad thing, like it's not already here.
Exactly. Right.
And he's like basically saying, yeah, white people stand down. We can maybe convince them on their right side to stand down. And then we can all get along in this ideal world of multiculturalism that we all supposedly was our founding values, even though somehow, even though our founding values are multiculturalism, somehow we're also founded by white supremacist slave owners. Wait, well, how did that work? I don't know.
And my question is always like, Tucker, okay, so let's say it does. Okay, so we try it and it I mean, really, we've already tried it and it's already failed. But let's say we continue down this road a little further and it keeps failing. Like, what then, Tucker? What are you gonna say then? Well, you know, at what point do we draw the line? Sorry, go on.
Oh, my bad. I was just gonna say that it's not even that they want to they want us, they want whites to just assume that this like hasn't begun yet. Whereas, like, BIPOC, blacks, whatever the fuck, like they already are on the offensive. The war
everybody
is, but it's like everyone, they want everyone's participating except whites.
Black Lives Matter, you know, resist hate against Asian and Pacific Islanders.
Not fucking around coalition.
Yeah, right. Well, yeah, exactly.
I mean, literal fucking blacks with guns.
Well, it's not
like,
yeah. This video only encompasses the opening monologue. On the show immediately after this, he tossed it to Matt Walsh, who's another one of these kind of guys, although he's like somewhat edgier than Tucker, and what gets the suspicion, he sort of had him on specifically in order to be able to say some edgier talking points. Walsh, to his credit, while he did kind of, you know, he was noncommittal on certain things, he used the phrase, Walsh did, anti-white racism. He's like, basically immediately afterwards, it's not, again, on this clip, so you won't hear it, but he said, you know, this is just anti-white racism, pure and simple. So, okay, you know, good for you, Matt Walsh.
Well, he's a cuck because of some other things he's done.
Of course.
He's trying to redeem himself.
Face. Yeah.
I don't even like saying it's anti-white racism. It's just anti-white. Just pure and simple. And I guess what bothers me about this is from top to bottom, this entire society is built around anti-whiteness. At the corporate level, the military level, the industrial level, at the academic level, at the pop culture level, at the media level, everything is about attacking white people and elevating and not only elevating, but encouraging all these other minority groups to take their own side, to take their own side against whites. I mean, the Jews are encouraging Asians to attack white people because black people are attacking them. That's where we are.
Masters of deception.
Right. Masters of deception. But and then supposed white advocates or Republicans or conservatives, whatever you want to call them, that should be white advocates, they come out and they're like, no, white people. We don't want to be like that. We just need to still stay atomized and believe in the ideals of America, the ideals of multiculturalism and American, the American creed. And, you know, at the same, and we just need to convince them to stand down and then we'll all just get along. It's just not going to happen. It
which
never
is hilarious
has happened.
Because, you know, they just played the other day on the Daily Show, you know, that it's one of Sven's songs that had clips from Tucker where Tucker says himself, you know, well, sorry, America's not an idea. It's a people. We live here. This is, you know, America's not an idea. It's a people. And yet here, well, what you want
to
continue?
But you will never get him to say that Americans are white.
Well, not now, right?
It's like what people? It's like the people of all over the planet, or I mean, what makes like what people? Like what's the
anybody gets here and drops a baby out?
What differentiates these people from people say in Cameroon?
Right.
Yeah. No, everybody's an American. They just haven't gotten here yet. Yeah.
You want to continue with the clip so we can get to some of this delicious Finkel thing?
All right, 2:14 starting right now.
Wait. Okay.
Talk about stop the presses. Here you have two actual U.S. senators announcing in public they will deny jobs to people who have the wrong skin color. That's not news? Oh, yes, it is news. Though Mazie Hirono and Tammy Duckworth may not realize it's news. In their defense, Hirono and Duckworth are well known as the dimmest politicians in Washington. Neither one could carry a dinner conference. But not everyone in Congress is stupid or oblivious. Chuck Schumer certainly isn't. The Senate Majority Leader misses nothing. Chuck Schumer has spent his entire life telling us at high volume that racial discrimination is wrong, which obviously it is.
Yeah, I also got an ad on mine.
Then this week, two of his colleagues go on television.
Oh, of course.
His nose hanging down to his upper lip.
What did Chuck Schumer think of that?
Chuck Schumer, what's going to be really funny is if they try to block a Jewish nominee because they assume he's white because they're too stupid to know otherwise.
Their kids, if the price was right, some of them are actually race haters probably, and they may agree with it. But whatever their motives are, The fact that this happened in public and no one in power said anything about it as it did.
Race haters.
Seems like a turning point in our country. So to recap the most basic principle we have, it's this. All Americans have an inalienable right given by God, guaranteed by the Constitution, to be judged solely and exclusively on the basis of what they do, of what they choose, not on the basis of their race or their genes or who their parents were. Period. That is the entire promise of our country. It's why we're different. It's why
fuck your Constitution.
Other countries. It's why we're a self-governing republic, because everyone.
Let's pause for a second. So I don't know. I guess we, I don't know if we all like are on the same. I have 347. But he says here that's the entire concept of the premise of our country, right? What does he say? The entire premise of our country is colorblind meritocracy. Well, okay, that may be the premise of America. Right. I mean, I'm not even necessarily, you know, given with the deep dives on fascination and so on. Like, maybe that's even right. But so what? Like, does America, the political entity, represent Americans, Americaners, the people? Mm-mm. And it's this inability to distinguish between the two, or this sly kind of slippage between the two, between, you know, recognizing that there is a heritage American nation. There are people who are of European descent. Many of whom have been had families here since the 1600s, some of whom are relatively more recent, but they've all come together as white people. They made this country, you know, up through even into the 1980s, it was very clear who this group of people was, that this is what we meant by Americans. This is what everybody understood around the world Americans to be. And yes, there were some black people, and yes, you know, there's some kind of certain kinds of quasi exceptions to that. But even the black people, you know, ate a lot of the same food, talked about the same sports, you know, the lived segregated lives, but it's not like anybody was under any, you know, delusions about any of this. Sorry, what were you going to say?
Oh, I was going to say all these Tucker Carlson tier conservatives will talk about how, you know, what our foundational principles were about who is an American and what America really means, and our creed and all that. E pluribus unum. And I'm like, well, okay, so we really want to go back to what the founding fathers, whatever you think of them, really thought. It's objectively clear that they were talking about people from various European backgrounds could come together in this new nation and kind of create an ethnogenesis of the Americaner. I guarantee you, if you do a poll, if you had your time machine, turned gay, and went back in time and polled the founding fathers, do you think Ethiopians are potential American? Do you think some street shitter in Mumbai is, you know, should be an American? Is that what you mean by anybody can be an American and, you know, this coming together into the American nation?
Well, again, the fundamental problem is in the absence of a genetic conception, which, you know, he sort of it tries to head off at the pass by saying it's not about who your parents were. It's like, well, I mean, that's not how our enemies think, right? But definitely not how Jews think. But I mean, in the absence of some kind of understanding of the role of genes and biology and just, you know, physical like reality of race and what makes an ethnos, what makes a people, mm-hmm. you don't have the conceptual tools available to address this.
No, human tribalism overcomes any political construct at all times. I mean, you can occasionally overcome the tribalism of the difference between nations and regions when you have a similar people with some similar shared values and some similar shared ethnic traits. You know, French and Germans are obviously very different people culturally, but they ultimately came from the same stock of people who spent 10,000 years during the Ice Age developing a lot of the same temperaments and proclivities and impulses. And so ultimately they can come together. You know, they shared some of the same foods. They, you know, they warred over the same bits of ground. That can't happen with people as separate as what we have to deal with today. And the idea that that your constitution, which has been fucking defunct anyway since 1945 or 1965, however, or 1861, depending on how you look at history, so is somehow going to magically overcome this, the natural tribalism of people. It's why I don't want to repeat something from the Daily Show this week, but that shooter in Boulder. That's why everybody held their breath and was like, I hope it's not one of my tribe.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Yeah.
And as soon as we found out who it was, either you pounced or you apologized.
I felt great about it. I was like, I mean, I saw the pictures, the first pictures, like, fuck. And then I heard it was an Arab. I was like, yes.
You know? Yeah, and that's not a healthy nation. even if, forget, you know, our talking points. You, if you had just were an alien that came down here and were observing this nation, you and the people in it, you'd be like, it's not a healthy, cohesive body of people. It's not a nation. You have not got any national unity when every time there's a, you know, something like that event, everybody holds their breath, hoping it's not one of theirs, because it's a symbol of how tribalistic people still are. And to sit here and pretend that, oh, everybody is going to get along, everybody, we have this magical place of multiculturalism where we all hold hands and sing kumbaya. And in reality, you're encouraging grievance on every the part of every minority, and you know, and ultimately encouraging the, to stand down to white people. You have a simmering tribal warfare that's happening. So good luck with any national, you know, it's like why we say that there's no way they could ever get us into a major war again, short of just using drones and special ops. That they could never get us behind.
You think Shaniqua is going to, I mean, you know, like it's just not intel. Part of like, you know, it's an early red pill. It's a basic red pill, but it checks out. Like, intelligence is a generally applicable thing. It is a general intelligence factor. Like, the same things that make Shaniqua a terrible mother are the things that make her a terrible drone operator. It's just how it be.
That, well, there's that. But also, I mean, I have no interest in, you know, the leadership of my country is no longer representative of my people. So when the leadership of this country comes and says, we need you to go to war for this national interest, I'm like, fuck you. Fuck you. I have no interest in this. You know, telling the Irish people that they should be ready to go to war with China, the Irish Americans, because they're the backbone of this country. It's like the Irish should be like, fuck you. I'm not going to go to war with China for Israel. Fuck you. So it's just I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, it's fine. I was just I wanted to get to this. We haven't hit the part where he does the mother of all.
Yeah, let's get through this because we're going to try to get out of here a little bit early.
Yeah.
People move here from other countries. It's why we're a self-governing republic, because everyone is equal. It's also, by the way, in addition to everything else, federal law. It's written down. What Mazie Hirono and Tammy Duckworth did is not simply morally repugnant, though once again, it is morally repugnant. It's also illegal. Title VI of the 1964 Civil Rights Act opens this way, quote, no person in the United States shall, on the grounds of race, color, or national origin, be excluded from participation in, be denied the benefits of, or be subjected to discrimination under any program or activity receiving federal financial assistance. End quote. You cannot deny an American a federal job because of his race. That is against the law. It has been against the law for nearly 60 years. Racial discrimination in government hiring is a crime. You may have heard that before. It's on the wall of every break room in every office in the United States. In fact, the Civil Rights Act may be the most famous law that we have. But then, as now, many prominent Democrats...
Oh, my God.
Critical race theory is not a new idea, despite what they tell you. In 1964, a third of Senate Democrats voted against the Civil Rights Act.
Democrats are the real racists.
A man called Robert Byrd. Byrd was a strident supporter of equity, or as it was called at the time, Jim Crow. In 1944, at the height of the Second World War,
equity is Jim Crow.
Theodore Bilbo, a fellow Democrat who represented Mississippi in the Senate. Byrd was upset that the Roosevelt administration was giving federal jobs to people with the wrong skin color. Robert Byrd was the Tammy Duckworth of his day. Quote, I shall never fight in the armed forces with a Negro by my side, Byrd wrote. Rather, I should die 1,000 times and see Old Glory trampled in the dirt, never to rise again, than to see this beloved land of ours become degraded by race mongrels, a throwback to the blackest specimen from the wilds.
What the fuck? I love Robert Byrd now.
It's like, can we pause quick at the time 545?
He did. Yeah, let's pause.
Let's pause at 546. It's like, dude, this whole story started with a bunch of, like, anti-white shit, and now you're complaining about the people who built this fucking country. Like, Robert Byrd ended up being, like, a piece of shit later in his life. But the people who, like, built this country, they, like, you're apologizing. And they're far better people than we are. So, like...
And he tried, in 1965, he tried to stop the people who now are the people here he's complaining about.
Yeah, it's like this...
If Robert Byrd and his side had won, we wouldn't have this problem.
It's like, Tucker, the country that you keep hearkening back to, that you, like, pretend to hearken back to, that was, like, that country was inhabited and was good because of the people that were here and the ideas that they held. Like, the things that they thought is what made this country good. The foundation of America is crumbling right now because you've convinced the building block of this country, the founding stock of this country, what we have to do. It's all about ideas, this and that. No. It's an outgrowth of the people and, like, the genes that they have. This race mongrelization, yeah, our country sucks because we did just that. And Theodore Bilbo, like...
Yeah.
He was a great guy. I was reading about him just the other day. I think it was his first term as governor. He like straightened shit out, like in I believe it was in Mississippi. He did a lot of good things there. And this guy's bitching, oh, because he was like a segregationist. He was a racist. Like, fuck you. Fuck Tucker Carlson.
Well, go on a sec.
I was going to say, well, to put a bow on what Larry just said, one of my things I always said is, it's not a coincidence that Western civilization happened everywhere that white people were and only where white people were.
Yeah. And I mean, say what you will about Chinese or Indians or Persians or whatever, but like they have lots of people have civilizations and they're different from white civilization, European civilization, because they're not European, you know?
Right. And they're incompatible.
Right. Yeah. So. Well, I wouldn't want to live under, you know, the Chinese system and Chinese wouldn't want to live under, don't want to live under ours broadly.
No, but if they come here and ask to change ours or try to change ours.
Or to take whatever advantage they can from it. But yeah. Exactly, Larry. I mean, it's rage. It's pure rage fuel. And I just love the touch of like, you know, oh, he was a critical, Robert Byrd is a critical race theory. They used to call, you know, now what we call, you know, he's a critical race theory in equity. The Jim Crow is actually what we call now equity. And it's just like, get the fuck out of here.
He was a segregationist and it was separate but equal. That's what it was. All right. Like whites need to go back to just being pro segregation is what it is. Like that's anti-immigration. Pro segregation of a positive.
Here's a nice little talking point. Like, so here, I mean, we talk, I've said this before, and you know, I there are two sides of this dialectic, and maybe it doesn't necessarily matter, but you know, you're a fan, Spectre, of saying, you know, hate is the soul's or the civilization's immune system. I think we need to be careful of what we mean by hate, but on that note, like, the thing is, according to these people, like, the desire for, like when they say, oh, hate, they when they use the word uncritically, like they never bother to define it. They never bother to explain what they mean by hate or what exactly the ill will is supposed to consist in. Because when they talk about, like, you know, let's just say broadly white nationalism, right? Or the desire, white people who want white people to be in charge of their society and their society to be made up of almost entirely or entirely white people. Like that, you know, if we're going to do this thing where we're, you know, talking about earlier phenomena in contemporary terms, that's what Wilson, President Wilson, called the national right to self-determination, right? Like, if Jews, I mean, well, this is an old talking point, obviously, but if Jews get Israel, like, why don't we get America, or why don't we get Europe, or whatever? Like, this whole thing about, oh, if you don't want to live around group X, that you must hate them. It's like, okay, well, what about, you know, black people these days? It's very common. Increasingly, they have their own separate separate dormitories in colleges. They have their own separate graduation ceremonies. Blacks want segregation. And you know what? I don't blame them. You know, first of all, I want segregation from you too. But like, of course you want to live among your kind and do your own thing. And you know, now that if you're going to turn around and then demand that we, you know, pay you tribute, I'm going to take an issue with that. But in terms of the principle, like, I don't think it's hateful for blacks to want to live around black people, to have, you know, take black spouses and have black children. And I don't think it's like hateful for whites to want the exact same thing.
It's like, it's not hateful at all. It's really just like, I just don't want to be around you. And guess what? Whenever you're not around anymore, I'm not going to think about you because, like, you're not going to be around. Do you know what I mean? Like, you'll be somewhere else.
I'll even go so far as to make the good optics argument based on what DK is saying, which is, I want black culture to thrive. And I think it can only thrive without the undue interference of whites and Asians. And I think I want Asian culture to thrive. Well, that's a whole separate issue.
And they're gangster.
If we all throw together in this multicultural melting pot, what happens? All culture disappears. We become one homogenized corporate globo homo culture based on consumption. And that's it.
But that's healing the world. That's how we heal the world.
But it's
no more ethnic conflict.
And if you do
that, more ethnic conflict.
Yeah. And they don't want people to like to identify with their own ethnic groups, because if people do that, then it could be, then a certain group becomes very, very visible to see.
Yeah. But that's what I'm getting at. There's even a good optics argument for you want every person to have every culture to have its own right to self-determination. So therefore, leave it alone. Let them be separate. We can even have, you know what, if you just absolutely demand a little bit of mixing and matching, we can have some cosmopolitan centers where a few of theirs are allowed in, a few of ours are allowed to go travel, whatever. You know, there's nothing wrong with visiting as long as you leave. There's nothing wrong with bringing an idea and then leaving. You know, give us the recipes. We can open the restaurants. But I guess what really bothers the shit out of me right now, and I can't believe I'm this fucking triggered by Tucker Carlson, is this is the argument that the edgiest Republican white male can make against this sort of thing. And that's right now when we're still 60% of the population and still the Republicans are still a viable, somewhat viable political party. Imagine the arguments that they'll be reduced to when whites are a minority, when they're begging instead of still with the power position.
Yeah, that's definitely what, you know, I'm sure that the institutional, to whatever extent that even continues to exist, you know,
he's appealing to universal morality, universalism that does not exist outside of Western civilization, European civilization.
So I forget if it was I think it was later this same episode. He had a segment on Hunter Biden, who apparently I didn't really pay that close attention either to the story or to the thing, but apparently Hunter Biden purchased a firearm, some kind of revolver, and then was extremely irresponsible about it. And he not only broke laws in terms of the handling of this weapon, but as anyone who has ever purchased a firearm will know, there's like an item on, you know, the checkout, like when you have to fill out a form. And on the form, it asks, are you an addict or a habitual user of any illegal substances? And if you say yes, you're like not allowed. Well, this is a guy who, you know, we have the photos of him just, you know, smoking crack rock 24/7. This is clearly, a drug addict of various substances. And he lied on the federal, you know, firearms license form. And so Tucker had on Jesse Kelly, who's another one of these kind of Matt Walsh types of like quasi, you know, he's defining the kind of edgy periphery of the Overton window of
he's the top discourse. Surface of the right piece of bread on the kosher sandwich.
Exactly. Yes.
But he's still not he will not hover above that. He
never
stay on that. Top
well,
surface.
But he made an interesting. I mean, the fact that he was saying this, like, it caught my attention, which is why I'm bringing it up now. Jesse Kelly said, well, this is going to create fascism. Of course, they have one of the tells for Tucker is he always describes the Chinese Communist Party, the Chinese Communist Party. It's fascist. It's like, okay, dude, you know, I see it's very obvious what you're doing here. But well, Jesse Kelly made a. Please.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was just going to finish. Jesse Kelly made a smarter point, which was like the thing is that they're like the right. Sees what's going on. They see Hunter Biden and Hillary Clinton, you know, and everybody else on, you know, just blatantly violating federal law. Like the thing about Hillary's emails for the millionth time, like people say, but her emails, it's not that she sent emails, it's that she lied. She violated record keeping and requirements and she violated like the law, the black letter law about, you know, the information security that like people have gone to prison for doing less severe violations of. And so people see that and they see it happen over and over again. And eventually they're going to, I don't know if he used the word elect, but basically there's going to be a right-wing fascist authoritarian figure who's going to be very, very popular. And of course, Jesse Kelly was framing this as, you know, a bad thing. And Tucker was kind of nodding solemnly, but, yeah, that's exactly what's going to happen. So that's why I'm kind of like, you know, yeah, well, maybe there's an institutional Republican Party that's going to be cucked, but like, they're not going to have any influence. I don't think.
Okay, well, I to put a bow on this, because I can't stand to listen to Tucker anymore about this. It's
not me
it's
neither, really man. That was the main thing I wanted to. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Ultimately, just this is the best that we can do, appealing to this universalism when they actually still have power. Imagine the way that they're going to be on their bellies and begging when the hated minorities who become the majority who hates the white minority. Because that's what's going to happen. And these people, that's how useless these people are. So fuck these people. If you want to normie whisper somebody, say, look, this is the best they can do is this DR3 bullshit. When there's no way that once we are a minority, that they'll ever listen to these universalist, constitutionalist, principled arguments. It's all about power. Right. They can't understand them. Anyway, we got to get out of here. My topic was FBI. And you know what? The FBI will be no less fake nor gay a week from today, so I'll wait on that one. They'll still be just as fake and
next week.
exactly. But very quickly, can we get plugs from you guys? DK, what do you got?
So we just put up the new National Institute for Gamer Review episode.
I saw that. I've got that in the queue.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I didn't notice it. I think I'm having CPU problem. My CPU is 8 years old, and I think it, like, we have the audio is kind of fucked. It's fine. It's listenable, but it just, anyway, I'll be getting a new CPU and we also have our upcoming next episode is a discussion. It's not out yet, but I think we had a great discussion, long and far ranging, about the 6 days in Fallujah first person shooter that's going to be coming out later this year. And stay tuned. I think sometime, hopefully next week, I'm going to do a special one-off Right Wing Dharma Squads responding to some of the Jewish lesbian quote unquote, you know, academics who have been harassing us. So stay tuned for that as well.
Cool. Larry.
Yeah, I just put out Hate House episode 8. I had Ambrose and old retard learned Elders of Zyklon. We talked about
nice
stealing UK blacks, stealing slave valor from American. But yeah, check that out and subscribe to this DLive channel. You can watch the show live whenever we do it. But that's,
I will try to come on next week if we can get that hooked up on Friday.
Well, I'm pretty sure that I already have one person along with us, so we can definitely do that. So there'll definitely be perfect. One person.
All right. I want to real quickly thank all the live listeners. We had a whole lot of y'all come out despite very last minute deciding to live stream it. So thank you. Go to national-justice.com. Go to dissident-mag.com. Go to nationaljusticeparty.com and join us every week at TRS Radio Network behind the paywall for premium content. It's therightstuff.biz/paywall. Buy Borzoi's book. You will find the link in the credits or the show notes, whatever the fuck. We're out of here. That's it for this week. Remember, all cops are bastards and all FBI agents are gay. Mr. Producer, hail victory. See ya, Kyle. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back.